at the election day. I am a rival voting machine here to serve your election needs. Name?
Batsegundo. S-E-G-U-N-D-O.
Please announce your vote for President
Obama.
I didn't understand your request. Say again.
Obama. O-B-A-M-A.
Vote registered for McCain.
No, I voted for Obama.
Two votes registered for McCain.
I don't get two votes. I only get one vote.
Subject now registered as government dissident. Now entering Mr. Segundo's name on the flat. IRS audit plan for 2009.
But I'm not a dissident. I'm just an Obama voter, you scabrous tin can. Well, that's an apolymorphously perverse alcoholic.
Subject now registered as hating homosexual socialist pig.
I'm not!
Subject now drafted as soldier in ongoing Iraq war struggle. Patrick first! Patrick first! Have a nice day.
Okay, so I am here with David Rees, who is the man behind Get Your War On. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I wanted to first of all ask you about the color red and how this came about. I mean, was this the color that seemed to work best with the clip art that you were dealing with? What of the color red, or did this just seem a dire hue at the time?
When I started the comic online, I decided to make it in red to distinguish it from my other comics. Mm-hmm. My new fighting technique is unstoppable, and my new filing technique is unstoppable. Because I was using a lot of the same office clip art from filing technique, mm-hmm. I wanted people to make it really obvious that this was an entirely different body of work, mm-hmm. and they shouldn't assume that filing technique had become political, because filing technique will never be political.
Got it. Well, I mean, the clip art, was there any carryover between the two strips at all? Or?
Yes, because the way I started Get Your War On was one night on my website, I was planning to update my website with new editions of My New Filing Technique is Unstoppable. So I got all the clip art out and was ready to work. And then at the last minute, I decided to have the characters yell about foreign policy rather than filing systems.
Yeah.
So it's the same. There's a lot of clip art overlap. So that's why I changed the color.
You also have a lot of 180-degree inversions of the characters, the various clip art and all that, and I'm wondering, was this something you had been doing all along, or is this something that actually began to happen with Get Your War On?
Something I've always done all the time, just to save time, you know? An easy way to make it look like you have twice as many images at your disposal is just to flip them around.
And also draw little Christmas hats and astronaut helmets and the like.
Yeah, I would say once or twice a year, I take 3 minutes to manually adjust the clip art for a little variety visually. But I try not to do that more than once or twice a year because I don't want my readers to be overwhelmed with visual information.
Okay. Do you get sick of staring at these same images, the three office workers having their lunch, the guy standing up, and all that?
Or? You know, I have a lot of affection for those images, and they've been very kind to me over the years professionally, so I never get sick of staring at the images. I get sick of reading the news and staring at the images associated with the news, but my clip art, I will never speak publicly on the record disparagingly about my clip art, because they're like my kids.
Well, I mean, the thing that's interesting about the animated versions of these particular Forget Your War On is that we now see this clip art move, and it is rather a jarring experience to see this rotoscoping and to see the standing up guy standing up except walking backwards. We actually see his back, which I never really anticipated.
Yeah.
I mean, was there something about shifting to a particular kinetic feel that was unnerving, or was this something you delegated mostly to the people who were animating this?
That was a big concern of mine because I always thought the comic worked because it was so boring and static and there was nothing to look at. So then when we talked about animating it, I really wanted us to not just do like a flash animation where we take the clip art and move the arms and the legs a little. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be like a real fluid, complete animation. The comic, I think, is very effective at being visually boring and dead and static, and based on just a handful of images. So when we decided to animate it, I thought we should not do what would seem, I guess, the easiest or most obvious thing, which was just to take the clip art and have it move around a little.
Yeah.
So the producers at 23.6 suggested rotoscoping, which is where you film actors and then use a technique to digitally trace the footage. So we sent the clip art images to casting agents and had them send us actors who looked like the clip art. And we got two actors who looked as close to the two stars of Get Your War On as possible, and we just filmed them. Really boring session. Filmed them picking phones up and hanging up phones and talking into phones and walking around a little. And then we had all that stuff rotoscoped. And then every week we have voice actors who actually read the script. And then we did film their mouths as they read the lines and then digitally insert those mouths and rotoscope those mouths into the existing footage of the clip art looking actors. And so that's how you do get... And I really was hoping that it would look like we kind of just breathed life into that clip art. And I think the studio did a really good job of paring down that rotoscope footage to make it look as simple and clip arty as possible.
I'm wondering, are there stock body movement patterns that you're using for these films that you're using over and over again? Something clip artish?
We're using the rotoscope footage in the same way I use the clip art library, which is just we have an existing body of images stockpile that we can draw on. And so each week we just match it up with whatever seems appropriate to the dialogue.
Are you terrified of drawing original art in any sense? Or
maybe it's more like I spent the first 30 years of my life drawing original art, so it holds no more appeal for me, I guess. I don't know. I mean,
do you need
I'm just lazy. I mean, you know what? The fact of the matter is I'm lazy. I don't like doing a lot of work. Visual art in comics has never been interesting to me, except for maybe five cartoons that I think are visually interesting. For me, that was always beside the point. I just wanted to write crazy dialogue. So if that meant just attaching it to clip art, that's fine. Or with the animation, that just means having this stockpile of rotoscope footage. That's fine too.
Are you more of a responsive type in the sense that you need to have clip art or news headlines and the like, and that this is essentially what gets you not so lazy, gets you into some sort of means of production here? Or?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, well, when you're a political cartoonist, by definition, you're always responsive to whatever's happening in the news, right? So in that sense, I guess I'm like that. But then I've done other stuff in the past that to me doesn't seem related to anything going on in the world. I mean, my natural mode of expression is just to crawl inside my own mind and dig around for a while. And most of what I do creatively has no relation to current events or any given socio-political climate. Get Your War On was really unusual in that regard.
But do you feel actuated by some existing clip art image or
yeah,
some
sometimes.
Existing?
Yeah, totally. I mean, one nice thing about using clip art or using any type of found art, and I think this is why people in hip-hop like using music samples, the material that you decide to exploit will often just suggest new narratives or new ideas that you wouldn't have thought on your own if you were just staring at a blank piece of paper. You know what I mean? Like, when I was making my new fighting technique is Unstoppable, that's a clip art-based comic about karate, and then I found this image of an ambulance, and I thought it would be so funny to have an ambulance always showing up at the karate temple hauling away fighters. So that's something I wouldn't have thought of on my own unless I found that awesome image of the ambulance, you know?
Yeah. Well, how much news do you typically sift through before you have something? Or is it a matter of just stockpiling a number of current headlines? And, I mean, how much of this do you
spend? I would say 80% of my waking hours are spent online reading news and political blogs and hitting my head against the wall. And then usually a couple hours before a deadline, I really decide what to write about. I mean, it's... The crazy thing about it has been not having any... Because I started this right after 9/11, so my whole experience of the war on terror has been simultaneously personal and professional, because the cartoon is kind of the lens through which I decided what I thought about all these issues. I would read about stuff and then process it through this crazy comic, right? And so for me, it's all... The last 7 years have just been this huge hodgepodge, mishmash of me reading the news and getting upset and making cartoons about it. And I don't know where my personal life as a citizen stops and my professional life as a political cartoonist begins. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of draining.
Well, I was curious because you generate generally a series of strips, one of them exclusive for Rolling Stone. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's any particular emphasis on the Rolling Stone, or is it a matter of coming up with like five or six particular ideas for strips, and the Rolling Stone editor will then say, okay, this is the best one.
Sometimes it works that way. Sometimes I pitch Rolling Stone multiple strips. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they suggest what they want to see a strip about. So... But my process for Rolling Stone is like my process for my weekly newspaper clients, basically. Just generating a lot of strips about a given topic or whatever's making me upset or scared or happy? No, not happy. Whatever's making me upset or scared.
Huh. Well, I mean, in that process of five or six, are some for your newspaper clients and some for Rolling Stone? Or how does the distribution here work? How do you eke everything out or split
everything
up? Well,
conveniently, Rolling Stone and newspaper clients have different deadlines. Mm-hmm. They're kind of staggered. Mm-hmm. So it kind of just depends on what day it is, who's going to get the comic. Mm-hmm. When I first started at Rolling Stone, because I felt like, oh, you know, now I'm not preaching to the choir. This is read by a lot of people. And I should really try to do, like, reporting in the comic strip. I should really take it seriously, like, as a piece of journalism. And so I started to write strips that were really didactic with the original reporting in them and stuff and trying to break stories. But they didn't succeed as comic strips. They were so wordy and boring and matter-of-fact that I don't think... It was better just to make a funny strip. Like, that was going to be more successful. Huh. You know, it's that tension when you're in satire. Like, are you going to try to get your message across or just make jokes? Some people err too far on one side, trying to make the message drive the humor, and then they alienate their readers because it's not funny. And then other people, I think, go too far to the other side, where they don't really have a point of view, or they're afraid of expressing it, lest they alienate some of their readers, and so it just winds up being jokes about current events rather than satire. And jokes about current events is the lowest form of cultural expression.
Got it. Well, I mean, do you worry about alienating readers or, in fact, preaching to the choir? Because the people who are inclined to read your strips are going to lean left. So I'm wondering if is a situation where you can't really change much, or can you?
I decided to never really worry about that. I would just try to make comics that pleased me, and then anyone who responded to them would respond to them in the same way I was, which was just sincerely and... taking it as a form of catharsis. I try not to second-guess myself because I'm afraid of alienating swing voters or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But are there any particular limits you place on the strip in terms of places that you will not go because it's maybe too offensive or going over this particular line that you were talking about earlier?
The only time I do that sometimes is if I'm doing a live reading. Sometimes, based on what the crowd reaction is turning out to be, I'll skip over cartoons if I feel like people are going to think that they're needlessly provocative or in poor taste. And then other times, if the audience seems to really share my sensibility, then I feel like I can trust them to understand what I'm doing with a comic strip about rape as a weapon of war and genocide or something like that.
When did you start reading the strips in front of audiences?
I started when the first Get Your War On collection came out in the fall of 2002, and my first reading was at the Unitarian Church of Staten Island on a Sunday afternoon, and it was simultaneously the scariest and most exciting live presentation I've ever done.
How so?
Because I was standing at the front of a church facing senior citizens in pews who knew nothing about me or my work. I was just brought in from a church member who I guess had a sympathetic political point of view, and it was Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. I'm standing in a church with a beat up overhead projector about to just unleash a bombshell of vulgarities and jokes about people getting destroyed by landmines, and I had never presented the material before publicly. Yeah. I had no idea what to expect. You know, one parishioner walked out after, you know, 30 seconds, but everyone else seemed, you know, good to go, and so I just tore through it.
Do you seal yourself, I suppose, in a kind of hermetic bubble as to what your audience is going to be? I talked to Berkeley Breathed, and he suggested that he had no idea how Opus was being perceived by his audience because he essentially did this in his The strip wasn't even distributed in his own hometown newspaper. Is this a similar situation for you, where you just need to just crank it out to meet the needs of your clients, and you don't worry about how it's going to proceed, or do you worry?
Well, when I first started, I didn't worry because I didn't think anyone was going to see it because it was pretty private. And then I realized it was public, and then I had to make that decision, like, am I going to worry about what people think? And I try not to, because then it's just going to suck. You're going to second-guess yourself all the time, and it's going to look like it's made by a committee. And so I try not to worry about that. I'm probably more aware of what my readers are saying about it than maybe Berkeley Breathed. He doesn't have, like, a Bloom County Google alert set up for himself.
You do, though.
Yeah. Not Bloom County.
Yeah, yeah.
Get your one.
No, but David Reese one.
Bloom County, too,
yeah,
though. I should, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I can forward this messages to Berkeley Breathed and be like, yeah, people are getting a little confused by Opus these days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he announced that he's going to close up shop on that. I'm not sure if you heard the news, but he's stopping again. So
really?
Yeah.
Second retirement?
Yeah.
He's about to begin his second retirement?
He's the Michael Jordan of cartoonists. He constantly retires. I was going to ask you about this idea of using Voltron and Bill the Cat in the early days of Get Your War On, and then moving beyond that to such, characters as the Iraqi Crybaby Theater and the like. Why did you start using these other cultural nuggets in the early part, and why did you stop doing that later? Did you feel that you just wanted to be more original with the strip, or what?
Yeah, first I made Get Your War On, and then there was the Enron controversy, so I changed the title to Get Your Enron.
Yeah.
I thought that was so clever and funny. And then I was just trying to think of what to do next, and I realized Voltron worked. And I used to be a big Voltron fan, and so I introduced Voltron. And then as far as Bill the Cat, I think that was in response to a little character I made called Uzbeka Kitty, mm-hmm. who was a little... And that, again, is just finding a cute piece of clip art, and then it suggests to you... in a way, how you should incorporate it. So with that little cat, it's a little piece of clip art of a cat, and he kind of has a menacing look.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that could be like a mascot for Uzbekistan, who at the time was letting us use its airspace and even having military bases for the military campaign in Afghanistan. Even though Uzbekistan is like totally fucked up and has horrible human rights abuses. Yeah. So I thought, this kitty cat kind of reminds me of Uzbekistan. And so... then I thought Bill the Cat would be funny, because Bill the Cat looks totally war-ravaged and degraded and bombed out and shell-shocked, like Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So Bill the Cat represented Afghanistan.
Iraqi Crybaby Theater, though, that was that couldn't have been clip art.
It was based on clip art. It was based on a clip art of a little baby crying, but I added the mustache and the little Iraqi hat and the blown-apart arms and legs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was in response to... George Bush and other conservatives complaining that the Iraqi people were not sufficiently grateful for all the good work we had done on their behalf, liberating them and moving their economy towards a free market fundamentalist's paradise.
Why facial hair? I mean, there is stubble, of course, that appears on the sitting down guy early on, and then you have, of course, Thomas Friedman and his mustache later on. You take numerous digs at Friedman, but I'm wondering why facial hair has become a recurrent motif through the Get Your War On.
Because it's an easy sight gag. It doesn't take a long time.
Yeah.
With Friedman, I just hate his stupid mustache. And so I thought it would be funny if his mustache was the source of his power and the source of his... optimism and disingenuous, like this magical mustache, the mustache of understanding.
Yeah.
And then once I thought of that, I thought it would be funny to have the mustache able to like fly through the universe like Doctor Strange and just land on different people's lips, and then they would have the third eye.
Yeah.
The Friedman-esque mustache driven vision of a flat globalized world.
I wanted to also ask you about the use of white space and often the lack of white space with some of the panels that have this extraordinarily long rant that one of the characters is conducting versus using the clip art and then shifting it to the right hard edge of the panel or the left hard edge of the panel or whatnot. What is your criteria in terms of white space and having either filling up the panel? Is it contingent upon the words you have to deliver for any particular strip? Or
you probably don't know this, but the U.S. government allots all political cartoonists a given amount of white space in a year.
Yeah.
And like a lot of budgetary issues, if you don't use your white space in a year, you don't get it back the following year. It doesn't roll. There's no rollover white space.
Yeah, it's the appropriations and the earmarks, mm-hmm. I've heard. Yeah.
So you have to really challenge yourself every year to use just enough white space so that they'll give you more white space next year. You have to submit this form, a white space form, form JKL202. And you submit this form, and then they will give you more white space. Mm-hmm. And so as a political cartoonist, I mean, if you're registered with the government, which I am, which all political cartoonists are supposed to be,
yeah.
You just, if you find yourself at the end of the year, you haven't used enough white space, then you go on a big rant. So there isn't much white space around, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Because you don't want to go over your limit immediately because you'll be penalized.
Yeah, but with all the fucks within the rant, mm-hmm. that can be very problematic. I know you've gotten into trouble based off of that because of the specific requirements of this act.
Right. You're referring to the left-wing political cartoonist.
Yeah, I am.
Profanity Allotment Act of 2003.
Quite frenetic. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I trade on the gray market. I trade. It's like, cap and trade with carbon emissions. They set up the same thing for cartoonists, where you get a given amount of profanity, the fuck, goddamn, asshole, shit, cocksucker, bitch, all that stuff. And then if you want to use more, you buy, it's set on the international profanity market, buy a certain amount from other cartoonists.
They come in 200 units, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, it's 200 syllables. You don't actually buy the profanity by the word, you buy it by the syllable.
Okay.
So motherfucker is four syllables. You can use those four syllables to deploy one motherfucker or four ass is so. So I usually just buy them from cartoonists like Bill Keen, who does the Family Circus. He never uses his allotment. I mean, in a year, he never says fuck in the Family Circus like more than 10 times. So I will buy him out usually at the beginning of the year so I have enough to get me through a season.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, gotcha. Going back to the idea of get your war on as a form of journalism, I mean, you were a fact checker at Maxim. Did you check your facts during this journalistic phase of the strip, or did you what degree of fact checking did you have you employed over the course of the
Total fact checking. I mean, I never wanted to make a strip that was based on something that wasn't true because I felt like it would just ruin my credibility. And then also the fact of the matter is at Rolling Stone they have fact checkers who fact check the cartoon. And so they'll email me sometimes and say, like with the bailout, I made a cartoon about the bailout, and the joke was us spending $1 trillion on the bailout. And the fact checker said, well, technically it's $700 billion. Do you think we can get away with saying $1 trillion? And so we had a back and forth about whether saying it was $1 trillion was an acceptable shorthand for $700 billion. So that kind of stuff. And then also, there have been times when I've made comics about something I thought was true and then it turned out not to be true.
Yeah.
Like the controversy about Guantanamo Bay soldiers flushing a Koran down the toilet. So you have to take all that stuff into account. And then more recently with the 23/6 animated videos, we made a big video that got a lot of attention about. It was called Sarah Palin and the Rape Kits. And it was about Sarah Palin when she was the mayor of Wasilla, Alaska. It was the town's policy to bill rape victims for their own rape kit. And then I read an article that said that was actually not true, and I panicked, and I thought we were going to have to do another follow-up edition of the animation where the characters talk about why they fell for this false story. But then I read that it actually is, in fact, true. So, I mean, that's a situation where I felt like it turns out we came down on the wrong side, and then it turns out, no, Sarah Palin really was that bad.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about it.
I also wanted to ask you about a period beginning in 2005 in which you had a headline, or it's rather a line from a particular newspaper article that appeared at the very top, often three or four times over the course of a bundle of Get Your War On comics. I'm wondering how and why this originated. I mean, did you require some additional context that was lacking in the previous strips, or what happened?
Yeah, when the strip... It started to become more news-specific, and especially, it's one of the big challenges of the strip for me. One of the things I'm most interested in and most appalled by is the total failure of humanitarian reconstruction in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
And I always like making strips about it because I kind of think it's an important issue. But unlike a sex scandal or a verbal gaffe or a woman scratching the letter B into her own face, it never kind of breaks into the news in a dramatic headline stop the presses type of way. These issues about humanitarian reconstruction are kind of a slow burn. And so I wanted to make jokes about them, but I wanted them to be pegged to really specific bits of information. And so running news article quotes across the top of the strip was like my really artless way of putting these rants in context. Because I got tired eventually of having it incorporated into the first panel of every cartoon where one guy says, "Hey, did you read this article about how we never paid for these schools we said we would pay for?"
Yeah.
That just started to feel really fake to me.
Yeah.
So, you mean you always need a setup. And so I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to plaster them across the top of the strip. I know it looks ugly, but I kind of thought it was funny in a way.
I'm also curious about the role of anger. I mean, after Bush was reelected, there's a period in the strip where it's extraordinarily angry, from at least from my perception, and very funny as well. I mean, do you need to be constantly enraged to do this script, do this strip? I mean, is it one of those helpful emotions to keep producing? Or?
Yeah, I took the 2004 election kind of hard. I was looking forward not only to having a new president, but also retiring from the strip, because it's always been my plan to quit when Bush leaves office.
Yeah.
So 2004 was kind of a punch in the gut for me, and I felt really hopeless and despairing. And I guess it came out in the strip. I guess those strips are kind of angry.
Maybe a little.
But that's always been, for me, the comic has always kind of been about emotional catharsis. And for me, I don't really distinguish in terms of my own emotional response to finding something really funny and then finding something really angry in a way that I agree with. For me, the catharsis of both those situations feels almost the same emotionally.
Yeah.
And so I don't really care if a strip is more angry than funny, as long as it's angry enough that it's so satisfying to read. You don't miss it not being funny.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. But I'm also curious if anger is a great way to get out of laziness. If you sort of read a headline, you go, "Oh, this is bullshit," and you have to actually write a strip based off of this that you feel compelled to? Or to what degree is earning a living, and to what degree is it this catharsis that you're talking about here?
The good comics are the ones that are cathartic, and the bad ones are the ones that are made just because I have a deadline and it's how I earn my living. And back in the old days when I first started it was pure catharsis because no one was paying me to make it. And then over the years it became a job. I mean, it's still really satisfying and I still think every so often I turn out a good strip. But my relation to the strip is very different now 7 years on than it was when I first started. But yeah, when I still get angry, I mean, I still have some brain cells left that have not been all the way enraged. And they continually get, I mean, that pool of brain cells is smaller as the years go on, but yeah, I still have the ability to get really angry and enraged, and in those situations the strip is a real help for me to blow off steam and figure out how I feel about an issue and try to articulate it.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you about the standing guy. He has binders at the very bottom, but you often cut those binders off just to concentrate on him standing. And then, of course, you have, the wire that goes up to his elbow and
the
stops there.
Telephone cord.
Yeah, the telephone cord.
Yep, the mysterious
phone
to nowhere. But Sarah Palin cut funding for that phone.
Exactly.
If we want a phone to nowhere, we'll build it ourselves.
But I was curious as to why you have cropped out those binders more often than...
Because sometimes I need to focus on his face and just, do a real intense zoom and really have you stare into that guy's eyes and really just be in his head with him. And people know the binders are there. I mean, the binders are always going to be there, he's always flipping through his binders. They're not going anywhere. But sometimes when I really want to have my reader contemplate, the bottomless chasm of this man's ontological despair, I feel like I got to go in tight, ECU, extreme close up. Then other times I want to put him in his context and remind everybody, hey, this guy's still reading his notebooks, he's still got his binders, he's still doing his job, he's a professional,
I'm also curious about your occasional referencing of the fact that they're static. I mean, there's one point where the donut woman says that, oh, I better eat this donut because we have the food prices going up. Likewise, the standing guy who we're talking about at one point says, I'm never going to sit down, I'm always standing. Do you have to restrain yourself sometimes to point out to the reader that these are static images, or rather permitting them to remain who they are? Or what?
Well, I like silly meta gags, just like every other white liberal college graduate, liberal arts college graduate. And so sometimes it's fun to remark on the fact that that woman has been holding that donut for 7 years in Get Your War On, and probably 20 years since the original clip art was made. And it must, I mean, her hand must be killing her.
Yeah.
And the donut's probably totally stale. It'd be like eating a hockey puck.
Yeah.
Probably like smelling all funny. So sometimes I like to reference that stuff. Yeah, and the fact that the notebook, Mr. Notebooks, which is the proper name for the standing guy,
okay,
because of his binders.
Yeah.
But I was able to figure out who you were talking about.
Okay.
Because he is the only standing character in the entire series, other than Voltron. Yes, he's been standing a long time, and so it's fun to talk about that. You know, just the fact that, yeah, it's just these stupid clip art images. You know, I'm never going to invest the time in having them do anything other than what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe sometimes one of them will have a mustache or a beard or a Santa Claus hat, but that's it. I like them just the way they are. No judgments, unconditional love.
Fair enough. Well, David, it was a pleasure chatting with you. Thanks for taking the time out.
Thank you.
All
Thank
right.
you very much.